do it, Graham. 468 comedy.
Oh, this
film
is
nerds.
It. We're starting.
No, no, we're starting.
Oh,
I
shit.
Swear to
I just
God.
Thought you were yeah. talking. I didn't know what the hell was going on.
No, I don't waste a word.
No, you don't, Chris.
No. It's like I'm completely silent for 6 days out of the week.
So. This is your one.
The one time I get to talk.
So yeah, this is like your cheat day.
Yes.
Your vow of silence cheat day. All right. So, interesting way to do it. Yeah. I didn't know monasteries had a cheat day, but that's cool.
You know, they're very progressive now.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, good. Everybody's kind of being more diverse in their thinking. Mm-hmm. So they're letting talking into a monk's life.
You know, there's too many rules. So.
Yeah. Those monasteries are all hemmed up with a lot of rules. A lot of fucking belly ache in those monks.
Shut up, write scrolls, and make wine. This is ridiculous.
I gotta shave my head. I gotta tend the garden. I gotta wear this weird robe.
And now
I
gotta learn kung fu?
Oh, no. You're in a kung fu monastery. God. What is
it's too much.
It's like the robe thing is weird. Mm. I mean, I'm not in the choir. Right. Like, is this like a spa?
Now other schools are going to attack my monastery.
Christ. Great. Now I got to make hot water and oil and throw it down at them. Mm. That's another task.
Yeah. It's too much.
It is too much. God.
It's just enough, you know?
Now the monk life is just a pain in the ass.
And there's no reward. At best, you get to survive when your monastery gets burned down.
Oh,
that's it.
Right. I mean, the reward's in heaven. Mm-hmm. Okay.
No,
is it?
I want a place to live.
Yeah.
So, and make my wine.
I don't want to wear sandals all the time.
And then
like
somebody,
an animal.
Yeah. And then somebody's got to fight a dragon, then get a dragon tattooed on their chest, and then have to make 2 seasons of a horrible TV show. It's like, it's ridiculous. It takes too long.
Was that a Game of Thrones thing at the end?
No. Iron Fist.
Oh, Iron Fist. Oh, yes, Iron Fist. I've purged that from my memory. Yeah.
Well, we have a jam-packed show. We're going to be talking about John Wick 3. We're going to be talking about See You Yesterday. And we're going to be talking about Rocket Man because our guest saw a preview screening.
Wow, somebody has a time machine.
I know, it's pretty cool. Well, who wouldn't? The host of, Daily Tech News. Of course he has a time machine.
He has a time machine.
Yeah, parked out back.
Yeah.
Now, did you kickstart that, or how did you pay for that?
I never get overtime on the parking meter either. It just keeps looping itself back.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcaster, writer, and producer Tom Merritt.
And space-time continuum.
And space-time continuum traveler.
Thank you for having me.
How's everything been going over there at the... that thing you think.
Oh, yeah. All that Christ. Stuff, yeah. Well, I only speak once a year when you guys have me here, so it's pretty silent.
Oh, that thing that Chris literally just said less than 10 seconds ago.
How's that tech news show.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
It's going great.
How's that nonsense going over there?
People can never remember our name. It's too literal, but other than that, it's fine.
Now, is that part of the monastery that they got Chris jacked up in? How's this fucking work?
It's all those stairs. That's, that's
oh, God. You guys grow your own vegetables? Yeah.
So now you do multiple podcasts. You do Daily Tech News. What's your other ones?
Cord Killers, where we talk about movies and TV shows from a cord-cutting perspective. Sword and Laser, science fiction and fantasy books. Current Geek, which is us watching old movies and new TV shows and talking about geeky topics and all that sort of thing. So,
see, I was just putting them all under one umbrella.
Yeah,
I had forgotten. I knew there was a lot.
Of course.
And they all sort of intertwine. Yeah, there's overlap on
there's
a lot
a
of
theme.
Them.
Yep.
And there's no way you could have gotten at least one word correct.
I gotta remember tech or core.
I'm gonna start one called geek. All That Stuff.
Yeah.
So you're pretty close.
And that one should just be a recap of all those
of all the other ones. It's like highlights.
Yeah, it's a time machine episode.
Yes, yes.
It's my clip show every week.
It's like a This Week in Sports. You cover all of this.
But that hasn't happened yet.
Oh, or has it? See, I'm already excited about the All That Stuff show. Yeah.
And you were yesterday.
In fact, it was your idea.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I feel like I'm starting to become transparent because I somehow screwed myself up on a past episode.
So let's talk about Daily Tech News show Parabellum. And
the final.
Yeah. We do have dogs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've been doing it for how long now?
It's been 5 years as of January 2nd this
year.
Oh,
that's great.
So,
And it's a video and an audio podcast.
Yeah. Right. We're just getting close to putting it on Twitch, actually.
Oh, okay.
But right now it's a RSS feed available on YouTube, and then mostly people listen to it on audio.
Okay, great. All right, you listen to me. I'm going to be on May 31st.
Oh,
the Tech News Show.
Yeah,
that. Book mm-hmm. that, guys. Chris and, Mancini's going
to
be.
We're
talking.
Looking yep. forward to finally getting into the big leagues with our guests.
Yeah. On May 31st. So you're scouring the monasteries.
Oh man, just 2 days of not breaking the vow of silence that week.
So let's really get started into this with John Wick 3 Parabellum. First of all, you and I both said, does it really need to be called Parabellum?
Just John Wick 3.
Yeah, it's fine. And for those of you that don't know, Parabellum comes from the Latin phrase, si vis pacem parabellum, which means if you want peace, prepare for war. But of course, Parabellum is two words. And it's also the alternate name for the 9mm handgun cartridge, the 9mm Parabellum. So, in other words, two reasons it's completely unnecessary. So
two reasons that less than 3% of the population is going to know what it means.
Yes. And Halle Berry broke 3 ribs while filming this movie.
Oh, my God.
And she also acted as dog trainer during the production. So she wore many hats on this movie.
How do you break 3 ribs being a dog trainer?
She was doing stunts too, and then maybe falling on the dog. I don't know.
It was dogs love ribs.
Yeah,
they do. They go right at them.
But yeah. I'll tell you, this movie again is exactly what you would expect. My favorite line from anybody on Facebook was when Rick Meyers saw it, and he actually put on Facebook, "This movie was too much even for me."
Too much what?
Too much John Wickness?
Yeah, too much. I mean, it really was.
Peak Wick.
There. Now, I'll say I missed the second one, but let me put it this way. I was not lost on the third one. I
John
kind of
Wick
had an idea.
Universe
yeah,
timeline?
What happened. But I will say this, though. If you watch all of these movies back to back, at the end, you will be completely desensitized to violence. So there's a benefit there.
The trailer is a little...
It's ridiculous. But the movie just... it's a cartoon. At this point, it's just a cartoon. And it's like, how many people is he going to kill? Oh, he's falling out of buildings and he's not... the most that can happen to John Wick is he gets up and goes, ugh. I mean, that's it. But he still always gets up and apparently is never hurt. He's literally indestructible. Every once in a while, you might see a tiny little scrape or something on his head, but he certainly seems to take no damage.
Or no prisoners, it sounds like.
Yeah, early in John Wick Chapter 3, the indestructible hero finds himself in a room filled with revolvers from the 19th century. He swaps parts of the revolvers and listens to the mechanism as he twirls the cylinders, and apparently that's a homage to a scene in Sergio Leone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, when Eli Wallach is assembling a revolver to suit his taste. And that scene, by the way, goes on for way too long. Yeah. So basically what this movie is just creative ways for gun and knife violence. And there are, I will say this, it does have a lot of creative ways to have this fighting. I mean, everything from horseback, he kills a guy with a book, apparently
stay in school.
Motorcycle ninjas, he's able to fight them. But I want to say one thing about the production, because as filmmakers,
goddamn motorcycle ninjas,
they're everywhere now. You can't get
it's
away
like
from
those
them.
Scooters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So
bird scooter ninjas, they're worse.
Yeah. They're unbelievable.
Yeah, you just need an app and you can get a motorcycle ninja, anywhere you want.
Beep boop boop, and here you go. It's like $1 for the first kill.
So, yeah. And every once in a while, it tries to put a little backstory in it, but let's put it this way. It's very little, and it doesn't slow anything down. There's a couple of cameos, and that's back to the shooting and the killing. But
and the Parabellum.
And the Parabellum, yeah. But I will say this from a production standpoint. It's interesting because when gun violence was shot before that we had all of these visual effects, it was squibs and blood packs. And the way things were shot and done on sets was that because for safety, even with a blank in the gun, you could never point a gun directly at somebody. So it was always a cheat when someone would actually get shot. And even when somebody had a gun to somebody's head and there was a trigger pull, it would either had to be visual effects or no one would do a blank at that range. So this movie...
Or it was a gun that had... It just clicked, like it had no chamber
exactly.
or anything
like
that.
Exactly, yeah. There were replica guns that wouldn't fire. So then this is clearly what's going on in this movie, because every single gunshot is a giant muzzle flash. It sounds like a Civil War cannon every single time a handgun is fired.
So, antebellum. And,
yeah. It's antebellum.
Tom Merrick from the All That Stuff podcast.
Time traveling Civil War humorist.
Oh, it's really.
I was just there. Yeah.
He was just there. Oh, great. How was the Civil War, by the way? Good.
Well, I won't spoil it.
Okay,
for you.
No spoilers. Yeah. No spoilers.
So this, because this movie, it literally is, I'd say 80% of the kills are John Wick putting a gun to somebody's head and then shooting multiple times. If you shoot somebody in the head, you don't need two shots. You really don't. But then my favorite part of those when, oh, there's armored enemies. It was like watching a video game. And they're like, oh, armored enemies. They're armored. I can't get through it. I have to get closer, lift up the visor, and shoot through the visor to people. But because everything is clearly a visual effect, because all of those shots, and also no one needs to reload, which is also very helpful. Because even when I shot the short film Hit Clown, we used squibs and blood packs. So when these guns fired with blanks in them, so you also saw not only like a little bit of smoke, but you know the shell casings come out of the guns. Right. Now on this one, really the main focus was the muzzle flashes, like they're giant and huge on every single gunshot. You didn't really see a lot of that stuff with practical effects that were there, like you know the slow stream of smoke that would come out of the muzzles of the guns, or the even like the occasionally you see the shells, like if like then they would be visually put in effects wise too. But it's definitely different than having like practical gun effects. But again, much safer. You could do a lot of these things that you don't have to worry about a discharge from a weapon. So I can see why Hollywood is for sure going this way. But it also creates this ridiculous cartoon caricature violence of, you know, a handgun that has 1,000 bullets in it that only shoots people in the head. So, and even like even some of these weird cartoon rules for the guns started to get broken. Like, okay, well, if they're all armored up, now we need these high-powered shotguns. So we're shooting the shotguns. That just blew a guy's head off. But wait, you're shooting the guy with the shotgun, but now that's okay. He's still alive. Now we have to shoot him in the head again with the pistol. It's like, well, wait, what's how powerful is this shotgun? It's changing from scene to scene. So it's really one of those movies that no one's going to be disappointed going in to see it. It's exactly what it sets out to be. It's a giant gun violence, crazy violent action movie with very little plot or script or characters or development. But you don't go to these movies for those things. So in that way, it serves its purpose.
What was the basic plot?
The basic plot is because he killed somebody at the hotel in the second one. That's the hotel that you're not allowed to kill anybody at, and he killed somebody there. So there's a contract out on his life for millions of dollars that all the other assassins want to collect. So all the other assassins are after him. So it's literally scene after scene of like, okay, here's the ninja assassins are after him. Here's the the white guy assassins, and then it's like all the different like assassin teams that come in. Yeah, that come after him, and then the he's trying to get help from the Russians, and then you know the table or whatever it is. That's like the word for like the syndicate. Then they come after the people that help him. So then there's the sideline of all this extra violence that doesn't involve John Wick, like that has like Lawrence Fishburne and what's his name, the guy from Deadwood.
Ian McShane?
Ian McShane. Yeah. So, and he's such a great actor, too. It's like when you have like guys like him and like Lawrence Fishburne, they're hamming it up in this movie, but it's fun, you know, because they're such good actors. You can tell they're kind of having fun and enjoying it. I mean, but, you know, the action is good. It's crazy. It's fun. And it's, you know, it's one of those movies. It is what it is. It's, don't go looking for anything more than it is because you'll be disappointed. But if you're just looking for a mindless action movie that will literally shoot people and knife people for 2 hours, this is your movie.
It almost feels like it's too much, like,
But I agree with Rick, though. It is. It's like how many times can you see someone get stabbed or shot over and over again? Right. You need to hang a little bit on a story.
There's a lot of bellum, not a lot of para.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's no preparing at all.
It's just there's no preparing.
Right.
It's just the war part of it. I love it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Aren't the John Wick movies now just apologies for killing the dog in the first one too? Like we're really sorry. We're going to show you more dogs that survive while we kill everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, they do reference that too, which is kind of funny. And it's like, well, all this for a dog. It's not about the dog. But then that's as far as they go, as far as backstory. Well, then what is it about? No, that conversation's never had. I'm like, oh, no, kind of sounds like it's about the dog. So it's got those great cliches of like, you got out once, now you're back in, and now you're on the run, and like all these great. I'm like, okay.
It feels like plot wise, it's sort of taking the Fast and Furious road of like the first one or two Fast and Furious was like trying to have a legitimate,
trying to be serious
thing. There's the undercover, really, and then. Like John Wick 5 or 6 is just going to be like John Wick inside of a whale.
I mean, it's really bordered on like there was a couple like almost like we're almost getting into James Bondy science fictiony stuff here, like with the secret organizations and the syndicates and the endless amount of assassins and hitmen that seem to be in New York. But what I love too, you know, a lot of times you have these scenes that are shot like in darkness or the assassins are, you know, in helmets. So it's great. You only can use the same four stuntmen over and over again because you don't see their faces. It doesn't matter. So it's almost like an Expendables movie. Oh, this first wave of enemies looks remarkably similar to that second wave of enemies that come in.
Cousins.
Yeah. But yeah, there's more dogs.
It's a big assassin family.
Yeah. The dogs join in the fight, which is hilarious.
Oh, wow.
You know, the trained dogs that are attacking people. And I will say it, you know, some of the scenes were action choreographed beautifully. I mean, it really was like a violence ballet, almost like some of it was very reminiscent of like some of John Woo's work, which was cool. But again, the thing about John Woo is if you only get violent scenes, it's like okay.
Is that how you started to feel like towards the end? Like,
yeah, it's like, all right, enough. I got it. Yeah, totally. Because again, it was over 2 hours long. I'm like, doesn't need to be. Didn't need to be this long. So, all right, that's John Wick 3. Everything you expect it to be.
All right, well, Tom, why don't you, since Rocket Man comes out in a week, a little over a week, but you saw it. Tell us, because we had some... Both of us, we've watched this trailer numerous times, and I personally am like,
it's too gay.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't stop. I'm not saying that.
It's just the right amount of gay.
As I said, I was like, because it looks cool, because it's sort of like the trailer at least makes it look like this very stylized version where it goes off into these sort of fantasy sequences. But the question is, you know, the biopic, sometimes they're too paint by the numbers or sometimes they take too many liberties. And those were is the concern going into this movie. So tell us without any spoilers, how is it for you? And what were you, first tell us your expectations going into it from seeing the trailer.
Well, I came into this like everybody else, kind of in my head, thinking of Bohemian Rhapsody. And the strengths and weaknesses of that movie. And I liked Bohemian Rhapsody as sort of a music video. And I've heard lots of people say that. And that's how I best enjoyed it. Like, you know, Rami Malek does a great job. I get to hear a bunch of Queen music. The story is definitely not accurate and certainly not that compelling. But they get there in the end. The Elton John movie is not at all like that in any way. This is and the studio doesn't want people to say this, but this is a musical. This is taking Elton John's songs and putting them into Elton John's life in places where they work. And I have to say, they work really well. I was impressed by how they would take lyrics that weren't meant for the story and found places to put them. But because of that, it's not chronological. You're going to see little, you know, 12-year-old Elton John singing songs that Elton John writes 20 years later because they fit into the story at that point. And so it's not a biopic. It's not telling a factual account of Elton's life. The way I think of it is it's telling you what it felt like to be Elton John. So there's things from his life that are real and real characters. And Bernie Taupin, I think, gets a pretty good shake. You know, he's given his credit for all the writing he does.
Mm-hmm. Well, that movie's not in the trailer.
Yeah.
Right.
But it is not going to be, if you're looking for like, I want to learn about Elton John's life, well, you're still going to have to go read the Wikipedia article afterwards to find out what was real and what was not. Because like you see in the trailer, the him playing at the Troubadour and everyone floating, that's showing you what it was like to be there. It's not And that's kind of what this movie is.
Right.
Like.
That was the emotional.
Yeah.
You felt like you were floating. It was so magical.
Right.
Somebody already put on Twitter, I was there and we all did float. So.
Okay. Well, I take it back. Yeah. This movie is factually accurate yeah. from beginning.
Get back in your time machine, Tom, and do a little more research.
I should have gone and visited. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Actually, I'm glad to hear that because now.
It sounds more interesting.
It does sound more interesting. Mm-hmm. And I won't have personally the expectation of wanting like a good biopic. You're just giving me an inventive musical that sort of tells.
Yeah.
Oh, he wrote that song about the way he felt when he was 12.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Subject to the filmmaker's interpretation.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
Which is really, that's cool.
And you don't shy away from his struggles with alcohol and drugs mm-hmm. and his, you know, worrying about being discovered before it was okay to come out.
Right.
That's all in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, whether it actually happened the way it does in the movie, I gave up even worrying about. But it's like, okay, this is an impressionistic.
That's great. When a filmmaker makes that clear, I think when those fail is when they try to do both.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
It's like, I'm glad the filmmaker just picked one and went,
picked a lane. All right.
Lane.
This is what it's going to be.
This is what it's going to be. It's going to be very impressionist, very stylized.
And it's a musical.
So you don't have to sit there and wonder, did this happen or not? You're just going to go, oh, cool. You're giving me this artistic interpretation of Elton John's life through his music.
Right.
Love it.
Yeah. And that becomes, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but that becomes fairly clear pretty quickly in the
right.
movie.
Now, Taron Egerton, how did he do? Because he actually did all the singing in the film.
Yeah, he did great. It was the kind of thing, not so much as with Rami Malek, where I felt Rami Malek sort of became, now I can only think of Elton John now. I've wiped Queen out of my memory. Freddie Mercury. He became a Freddie Mercury. Taron Egerton made me forget he's Taron Egerton.
Mm.
And so, you know, I was on the ride with his version of Elton John, and the singing was not a thing I thought about after the first couple of songs.
Okay.
You're starting with his childhood, so you get, I think, a very talented young actor doing songs
right.
early. Once Taron comes on and starts singing, the first time you're like, oh, okay, Taron, let me see what you've got here. And it's good. And not mimicky, but also not so far off that you're thrown off.
Mm.
I think...
James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe were considered to play Elton John.
As was Tom Hardy.
Yes. That would have been probably a much different film if any of those had been cast.
They're all very unique actors.
Yeah, yeah. They're all very different, too.
And I don't know if they sing. Do they sing? Is that a...
I have no idea. No.
I, for some reason, I assume Daniel Radcliffe can do anything because he was Harry Potter once.
Right.
So he can just magic it up.
Yeah. He does.
Wasn't
magic
he in a musical or something? Was Equus a musical?
I have no idea.
Anyway, yeah. I'm really glad it was Taron Egerton. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Because he apparently has a real passion for singing. He recorded songs for Eddie the Eagle and Sing.
Let me ask you this, Tom. Because the filmmakers went into this with a stylized fantasy version, sort of, did that give it for you as the viewer a little more license for the casting and interpretation of Elton John through Taron Egerton?
Yeah,
You know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
had it been
question.
More, of, had it been more of a straightforward biopic?
I wonder if I'd have been harder on it.
Like Malick, when you're doing more straightforward, Malick looked. They made him look. They gave him the teeth.
Yep,
they made him look like Freddie Mercury.
Just like him. Mm-hmm.
So, but when you're because he was doing more acting scenes and talking like Freddie Mercury,
mm-hmm.
like that's more, and obviously Freddie Mercury has sort of a very unique voice just in his conversation, or he did in his unique voice and everything. Whereas, I mean, not that Elton doesn't, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I think I didn't even realize that, but I probably was a little more forgiving because of that. On the other hand, and maybe it's me, but I don't think of Elton John outside of his music ever.
Hmm.
So when he's just having conversations in the movie, there's nothing in my mind that's comparing it to like, oh, well, I've seen so many interviews with Elton John.
Right.
I suppose if you're a super fan, that might be a consideration for you.
I don't know how many reports there have been of like Elton John trashing hotel rooms, like, you know, as he's touring. Like, you know, it doesn't seem like, you know, it has that kind of wild reputation.
Yeah, he left so many feathers.
Right.
Well, and I think that's part of it too.
They had a boa fight.
The costumes help because they actually do a thing in the credits where they kind of show you real pictures of Elton John at the end, and it's helped me go, wow, so that's really like he dressed up in that kind of thing, and the costume becomes so much Elton that you can't really see whether it'd be Elton or Taron behind it anyway. Mm. Some of those mid-70s costumes, for sure.
Right, when he was really over the top.
Yeah, when he's got everything. The big glasses and the headdresses. And mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Mm. Well, now I really want to see it.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure because I didn't know if it was going to be a big misstep for the filmmakers or they tried to do too much, but now that makes me really want to see. I want to see a sort of impressionistic fantasy version of it.
I was a little disappointed with how good it was because we have a movie draft that mm-hmm. we all do, and I was like, it won't outdraw Bohemian Rhapsody. I think it might, though.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Do you think it's award worthy?
I think the singing might detract from Egerton getting his due for the acting. Mm. Because the fact that Rami didn't sing, everyone really focused on the parts that were dramatic, and they're very dramatic. The fact that Taron is singing and it's such a fantasy version of the story, I wonder if that'll keep people from giving him his due. Because I think he definitely captured Elton John. I think he did a fantastic right. performance.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised at all if when Golden Globes come around, it's like when they have that dumb comedy / musical category.
Yeah, right.
Probably end up there, for sure.
No, it'll end up in drama. Yeah. I pay attention to what the categories mean.
That's interesting. I mean, obviously, I don't know, it's May. We're getting very early, but this is definitely Oscar baitish in right. the sense that soundtrack,
yeah, yeah.
costume, mm-hmm. you know, it'll get some of those, I would imagine. Who knows right. what's left to come up the rest of the year, but it would get some of those. But then as you say, Tom, does it have enough for it to automatically get a best actor or something like that?
Yeah, and I wonder if voters will maybe unfairly be distracted by that.
Hmm. Interesting. All right.
All right. So Graham, you saw See You Yesterday. This is the Spike Lee kind of coming of age.
He produced it. He didn't direct it.
Oh, he didn't direct it.
He produced it.
Kind of time travel movie. You know, Speaking of time travel.
it was pretty cool. It's exclusive to Netflix. And, you know, I love time travel stories. And it does the thing, without going into any spoilers, of going back to try to change something. Now, this is in the trailer if you watch it.
Right.
So there's these two nerdy kids who live, like, I think in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And one of the girl, it's a girl and a boy. They're both, I would say, 13, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And her brother gets shot by the cops, right? Mm. So they're black. He's an unarmed black man who gets shot by the cops. So that's part of the story. And then they go back in time to try to fix it. And, you know, that, like a lot of this happens in a lot of time travel stories, obviously, butterfly effect, whatever.
Right.
We'll just go back and fix this one thing, and then that opens up a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, then you come back and New York is destroyed.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing that was so interesting about it was, you know, in all these time travel stories, it's usually like nerdy suburban white kids. Mm-hmm. So these are nerdy urban black kids, you know, in the Bronx, but they're just they're still nerds. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing that was really inventive and cool. And, you know, she's reading Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time. Mm-hmm. And which I think is good, and it's powerful to say, it's something Neil deGrasse Tyson, and I'm going to paraphrase this and butcher it, but he was talking about, he responded to, like, the, you know, when people say, well, girls just don't take to science the way boys do. That's why there aren't as many. And he's like, maybe it's how we're raising them. Because I was a young black and everyone told me you should play basketball and you should play football. And he says, I don't want to. I want to study science.
Right.
You know, he said it in a 10 times more articulate way than I just said it. But he very, you know.
But the point is cultural bias, for sure.
Is cultural bias. And so this movie really helps just display that just from the opening. These are two nerdy kids.
We were just talking about this last week. Diversity starts at the story level.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. And it didn't, and they didn't have to make a big point of that. Mm-hmm. And these are kids living in the Bronx. So there's fighting and gang stuff and whatever else. And, you know, and violence and shooting, and not just from the cops, but crime and all this other stuff. While
gang violence.
Yep. Mm-hmm. While they're two kids trying to figure out time travel,
right?
Which is awesome. And, you know, they're two nerds trying to figure this out. There's a great little thing in here that the teacher, in the opening scene is Michael J. Fox.
I know, that's great. I thought that was like, oh, well, somebody's making a joke. I'm like, oh, no, he really was in this movie.
That's great. It was so great. And she's like, how come we got a B+ for our time travel experiment? He's like, well, I don't think you guys understand the ramifications. It's so like, oh, awesome shout out.
And apparently there's a drawing of a flux capacitor on the board at the laboratory.
Yep.
As a reference to Back to the Future.
There's a lot of really cool things like that. Obviously, the filmmakers, you know, were probably kids in the 80s when these movies came out and saw this. So they did a lot of referencing to that. Without getting into spoilers, there's a couple things towards the end where I was like, I think I wanted the female characters to arc a little more, me personally, in her writing, because she's a stubborn young girl and she wants to do her way. And then so that sort of, no, I want to do it this way kind of causes some problems. And I wanted to see that. I wanted to see her learn from that a little more. Right. And so there's a little too much just constant arguing and fighting with everybody. And they established that early on. You're fighting with everybody. You're going to get yourself in trouble because she's like getting up in guys' faces. And her older brother's like, hey, stop it. You're fighting. And also, you know, you're the smart one. Stop acting. There's a line where he says, like, you're acting like a hood rat. You know, the older brother says that to her. And you know, so it's like they established these things about her character that I'm like, oh, this going back in time and not taking it serious. Because they established that. Again, Michael J. Fox, early on, they established this thing. Do you understand the severity of what you're doing? Even her best friend, the guy that is her assistant, he's like, because the first time they go back, she just like gets revenge on an ex-boyfriend or something. And he's like, hey, her 13-year-old best friend is like, wait, do you understand what this is about? And then I kind of feel like they make this big point of establishing it, and they didn't do enough of it. And maybe I'm nitpicking, because if you're a 13-year-old who this movie can potentially turn you on to getting involved in science, especially if you're like in the inner city and you're like, wow, kids that look like me living in my type of neighborhood are if that's what it does, great. Then it's a fantastic movie, and maybe I'm being too nitpicky. But overall, I liked it. It's really inventive, but it is a movie for like 13 or 14-year-old kids.
Right.
So maybe my criticisms
might have resonated with the kids.
The kids wouldn't be bitching about story arc or character arc. You know what I mean?
They have enough problems.
Yeah. I recommend it for my kids then.
I would really want to see what your kids think
of
it.
And it's present day.
Present day.
Yeah, okay. Except when they go back. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it takes place, like their first jump is like June 28th, 2019. So the filmmakers like did a wise job of projecting it out. They time traveled.
Yes.
That's my birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Ooh. Wow.
Not anymore.
It used to be. Yeah.
We went back and changed it. So it's really cool. And there's a lot of fun stuff in it. They don't have a huge budget, and they don't let that get in the way.
Right.
Great science fiction. You know, I love micro-budget science fiction where it's all about the big idea more than the big effect.
Exactly. Yeah. And they really talk a lot about the big idea. And again, we've heard this before in time travel movies, but when they applied it to a part of American culture and society that we've never talked about, time travel in the inner city and what it would do to potentially undo a horrific crime.
It sounds like it's all about setting. They're like, yes. Look, you just put it here where these actual people live, and yes, all these other things will just naturally arise from the story.
Yeah, these actual things that are happening.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, these unarmed black men getting shot, this is happening on a regular basis. And the cops are getting acquitted and all of this stuff. And so let's put cool time travel into it. It was like really inventive, smart stuff. So
great.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
And I want to check it out.
Again, for kids, it's super smart.
Cool.
For film nerds, maybe I'm being too.
But it is the kind of time travel where you can change things. It just obviously has ramifications. It's not.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So they do go back and change things, but it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's all a right. can of worms and a whole right. thing. Then you got to go back, and then we got to go back and change that thing for that thing and that thing, and which is great.
I call that non-looper time travel.
Yes. Yeah, it is not Looper time travel. This is better than Looper.
This sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's on Netflix. So
cool.
Just watch it whenever you need to.
All right. Sounds like, you know, kind of same time travel as like maybe like Bill and Ted, that kind of like those kind of rules that they did. Remember when they were outside the police station? When they're like, oh, if we only had the keys. Hey, here are the keys. Now we got to remember in the future to come back and actually put them there so they're there when we got here.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's part of the thing, too, that and this is good, and this is where, because they're 13-year-old kids that are trying to map out this highly right. complicated mm-hmm. scientific and moral quandary
mm-hmm.
as 13-year-old kids. So that was like, that's where I'll cut them some slack.
All right. Well, guess what we have, Graham? We have some Patreon sponsors.
Yeah.
Yep. And this is the $50 level on Patreon. We will read your ad for your item, service, website, whatever it is, one line and the URL. Mm. So Johnny Rulon, he still has his novel, Rulon. Green Cheek, Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon, both digital and hard copy.
Hello, Junkie.
It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel. Follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and immortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. HappyHorrorShowProductions.com, HappyHorrorShowProductions.com. Fanboy Planet, a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. Check out Fanboy Planet for your comics news, your movie news, TV news, and amazing interviews with industry insiders and artists. FanboyPlanet.com. I did an interview with Fanboy Planet.
Nice.
So I will let you guys know when it is live.
Cool.
So really good guys over there. They have a real nice operation. And for Chris Parker Howard, from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday, wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com.
I've been following their Twitter or Instagram account, and it's mm-hmm. very, it's fairly cool.
Oh, cool.
So I would check them out.
Check that out for sure. Alice Frazier.
I also follow her on Instagram.
Yes. Co-host of, she's always busy, that Alice.
Always busy, mm-hmm. doing shows yep. and taking breaks and surfing.
Yep. The Bugle, oh, she surfs?
She surfs, yeah. Nice. I got to go surfing with her.
The Bugle podcast, host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. They recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Go to alicefrazier.com for more info, alicefrazier.com with an S. And Rebecca Evans, The Art Podcast, new episode with writer Mark Silver talking about the realities of art and life.
Ooh.
Find The Art Podcast on social media and theartpodcast.com with an S. The
Art I follow Podcast. Rebecca on Instagram.
Yeah. Instagram's kind of changing. Isn't a lot about video now?
There's a lot more video content on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And follow us at Comedy Film Nerds, come mm-hmm. to think of it.
Check it out. All right, let's get to some trailers, Graham. And let's get to first one is the sequel that no one asked for, Angel Has Fallen.
Oh, thank God. Hold on.
Let's do it.
Oh, Buffalo.
Oh, there's something happening.
Yeah.
You must really
what
like
it is, it's not
Mr.
exactly
President.
Clear, though.
Yeah.
It's cold out here.
Sorry. Not anything to get out of D.C. for a while.
God, Morgan Freeman. I always just think of Easy Rider from Electric Company.
You. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations. I'll give him my best shot, sir.
Benny's on his way.
Wait a minute.
What is that?
Uh-oh.
What's going on?
Is it birds?
Wait. What are those things? Oh, no.
Oh, it's drones.
Don't move! I'm coming to you! They're coming at you, Mark! Get him in the water! Get him! Go!
Did you just throw the president in the water?
He sure did. It's the only way to save him, Graham.
I got you. Going under. Dive deep!
There's been an assassination attempt on the president.
Mike Banning. You're being charged with the attempted murder of the President of the United States.
Come on.
But he saved him.
Don't you see that I'm being set up?
You mean because you saved the President in two other movies? No, that never occurred to us. Clearly, you're guilty.
It's like the Rockford Files. Like, he saved Los Angeles so many times, and they still treated him like a dick.
Yeah.
The President's not safe.
What?
Then try and finish the job.
Oh, the president. You mean after an assassination attempt, he's still not safe?
Oh, they still want him dead? I thought it was just a one-time, a one-off.
And then the rest of the movie is a congressional inquiry.
I want security for the president. How do you think, Dad?
Oh, Nick Nolte is the dad. It's
great. Oh, I raised you to be a special op, yeah, not a cry baby.
Dressed as a lumberjack.
There's no crying in Secret Service.
I know I was hard on you, but it made you who you are.
Don't worry about finding me. I'll find you.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there's a baby and a
boy,
kid.
I hope his family's safe.
Are they going to make it personal? But not every time.
Now it looks like he's trying to save him again. So clearly we're in the third act of the film by the end of the trailer.
Okay. I mean, if they want to keep making these movies, that's fine.
How many of them have you seen?
I've seen, I think I saw Olympus.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see London.
Okay.
This one, Fishing Trip, has fallen.
Yeah.
I don't know about
Lake Havasak. Lake Havasak. Yeah.
Bass Boat has fallen.
Yeah, brought to you by Cabela's. I love how they're like, is that a flock of birds? Like, what is this, radar from World War II? We can't tell what these things are.
They wouldn't have any radar in place. They wouldn't go, there's 45 metal objects flying.
All flying at the same speed and not changing formation.
Right.
Clearly, that's birds.
That's got to be birds. And storming into an attack formation, you definitely aren't on the lookout for that. Mm-mm. When the president is out on a boat in the middle of the lake.
Wide
open space.
Expectations have fallen.
Training protocols have fallen.
So many things.
What, like, have they even just, Googled... what the kind of security is involved when the president goes out and about?
No. He's in DuckDuckGo.
It's like when the president does anything, any president, they have hospitals prepped with his blood type.
We don't need to do any research. Just whatever you need, just watch Air Force One.
Okay. Is that Kirk Douglas?
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Kurt Russell. Wasn't he one of those guys too in one of them?
Oh, I'm sure he was
Executive
there.
Decision.
He was in one of them.
Yeah, sure. Just watch Executive Decision. Yeah, that should be all the research you need. All right, Angel Has Fallen. That feels like something I wouldn't even take the time to watch on a plane.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because I would just be like, come on.
That's what you watch on a transatlantic flight when you're fine if you fall asleep.
Yeah, you've already watched three movies. Like, and you just want to have
flickering images.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You still have 7 hours left of your flight. They've already given you dinner and the slippers.
Yeah. The melatonin hasn't quite kicked in yet.
And you're like, okay, well, we'll just leave this on.
Yeah.
And I'll have the headphones loosely around my skull.
And if this flight is any more hours, I'm going to hang myself.
That was called Maze Runner for me.
Yeah. I hear you.
Oh, Chris had some high expectations on Maze Runner.
All right, next one is Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, which is a sequel to Maleficent.
When Ants Invade, tough moms.
So somebody said, Graham, try to have these more queued up, and I can't get all of this stuff too queued up. It takes, because then it'll just start autoplaying, YouTube autoplay. So that's why you're hearing a dumb ad that I can't get past.
All right.
Thank you so much for listening and complaining.
Right, so far, no actors in the initial scene.
I remember the story of an evil witch.
Oh, no.
Witch.
And the princess she cursed to sleep forever.
Okay, because we need a backstory, because no one knows the story of Sleeping Beauty.
The story became legend.
Sleeping Beauty has fallen.
But this is no fairy tale.
Are those drones?
Yeah.
There are many who prey on the innocent. I'm sure your kind would agree. If I didn't know better, I'd say you were making a threat. Well, do you? Do I what? Know better.
There's a woman who looks like a vampire.
Extra cheek prosthetics. Gotta be those. Completely unnecessary. Oh, yeah, they are getting drunk.
And this one's different?
Yeah. All right. I just...
Well, I think it's great that they just kind of repackaged The Huntsman and just re-released it.
Maleficent. Yeah. More Maleficent.
Yes.
The Huntsman goes to Elfland or mm-hmm. whatever.
I don't know. You know, the first one was okay. Let's not get crazy and say, oh, the first one was so good it deserved a sequel. No, it didn't. It was okay for a, you know, kind of kids movie spin on Sleeping Beauty. But I'm like, okay. Sure. As far as like a sequel goes, I'm like, not necessary. And I don't know what's going on with Disney where they're just so hell-bent on just remaking all these, you know, animated franchises and then expanding them out when there's an entire library of like live action classic stories that they could be focusing on, which could be amazing. Like a 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea mm-hmm. remake, Treasure Island, Swiss Family Robinson. I know they've been in development for years, but those are ones that could really be interesting with today's effects.
Either so. Angelina Jolie was just under contract and they had to spend it.
Oh, it had to be. It had to be like, well, this is a two-picture deal in case we do a sequel. And she's like, fine, you're not going to do a sequel.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, no, really? All right.
Or like they had to pay her for the sequel even if they didn't do it.
Oh, yeah, pay or play. Yeah, or something. It could be.
So it does feel like a manufactured movie. Like everything on paper says we have to make this movie, so let's make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go make it.
Sell more of those hats.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when Sony had to keep making horrible Spider-Man movies because they were so afraid to lose the character.
Right.
It's something. It feels mm-hmm. like there's something mm-hmm. like that in this. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, like how municipal governments or whatever will just, well, we have to spend the money so we get mm-hmm. the same budget for next year.
Yeah.
Graham, are you saying it's mal-efficient? Or not? You're probably not saying, no one's saying that. Never mind. I withdraw the statement.
Tom Merritt from the Anything Goes Under the Sun podcast or whatever. I don't know, whatever the shit they do over there. Oh, boy.
So we have on DVD and Blu-ray, we have How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World. This movie was actually pretty good. I liked it better than the second one. I'm a big fan of this franchise. It's interesting because these franchises blow out so much where it's like then it's not just the movies. Then there's like eight different series on Netflix that you have to catch up to know exactly what's going on, but which I did not. But my son did because he watches all of those.
All right.
And but what I really liked about it, it's that kind of movie that clearly they had Toy Story 3 on in the background while they were making it. Like, like how are we going to end this on a poignant note? And sure enough, that's what they did. And they hit literally all of the exact same beats. But here's the thing. They worked. So it didn't really even feel really like contrived or stolen. It felt like it was earned, like you know, because it made a lot of sense. And it had some interesting things about like dragons and growing up and, you know, instead of letting go of the toys, basically you're letting go of the dragons. So it's definitely a good ending to the trilogy. And
because I saw the first two.
Yeah.
I loved the first one. I remember seeing the first one in
3D.
3D, and I was like, man, this was great.
Right.
And the second one was like, okay.
Yeah, I didn't really like the second one too much.
And so I didn't get to see this one.
Yeah, it was good. It was better than the second one. It was probably on par with the first one for sure. But all again, right. It was like a good ending for the series. What I like about it too.
They
wrapped up. There's not going to be any more. This is it. But what I liked about it too is animated movies rarely do this when they do have sequels is every movie, they aged the characters. So there was like that progression of time. Mm-hmm. So it was really interesting to see because it's the cheapest thing as well. We already have the model in the computer. Why would we change it? But they actually did each time. And also you could see the level of detail increased as the technology got better for the third one. So this is probably the most beautiful of all three. And the next movie is The Upside. The Upside is a remake of a French film. I think called The Intouchables.
Yes.
This is the Kevin Hart.
Bryan Cranston version.
Yeah.
Well, he's a millionaire or billionaire, whatever, but he's confined to a wheelchair. Yes. Okay, yes.
And I didn't see this, but I did see the original. And I will say the original was really good. I really liked it. So this one didn't really do that well in the box office. But I can't speak to how it was. So if anybody saw it, let us know on Twitter or Facebook or the message boards what you thought of it. So, and the last one is Isn't It Romantic? This is the Rebel Wilson parody of romantic comedies.
The trailer actually looked funny.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I didn't see it.
It looked like the best comedy of 1997.
Go see It Happened One Night.
Yes.
And then write to Isn't It Romantic?
So
I must have had access to Tom's time.
Yes, it was. Yeah, the filmmakers had it, clearly.
Wow.
So you could check that out. And we have premiering this week. We have Aladdin. You know, I got to say, every trailer that comes out makes me want to see this less and less.
The movie, I was driving down the street and I saw a billboard and I was like, ugh, enough.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, maybe the trailers will get progressively better. Maybe they're just not showing me everything. I'm like, oh, now I've seen enough. That you've shown me enough.
Well, the NDA is Wednesday, too, which is never a good sign.
That tells you they know it's bad.
Right. Mm-hmm.
For those listening, that's the non-disclosure agreement, which means they do advance screenings for movie reviewers and stuff like that. And
they can't be released until a certain date.
They can't release any. And
can't do your reviews.
Your reviews or anything like that until Wednesday. Mm-hmm. That's a bad sign because if the closer it is to the release date, they know it's horrible.
The Skyscraper NDA, for instance, was Friday. The day it came out.
Movies that they know are good and they'll release it a week later sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
You'll get some advanced screening reviews because they're confident that will help drive people to the theater.
It'll help drive the buzz.
Yeah. Whereas this will do the opposite.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about these movies. No matter how bad they are or how even like just boring they are as far as remakes go, there will always be like that amount of tickets they're always going to get because kids are going to want to go see it. And every time a kid goes to see it, you get two tickets because you get at least one parent that goes too.
Right.
So
and there's not a lot of other kids' movies out right now.
No, there isn't. So it's a good time to release it, even if it is horrible, which I'm kind of starting to think it is. But I don't think I'll be seeing it this weekend. Like either one of my kids are like, why would they? We already have the animated movie we've seen. I don't want to see this. I'm like, I get it. No, we don't have to.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is some of them are much more interesting to look at as far as, you know, anticipation. Like when Jungle Book, that trailer came out, I'm like, at first I wasn't sold, but then everyone else got excited. Then more trailers came out. I'm like, I'm on board. It was cool. Mm-hmm. Now, my kids are excited about The Lion King, like when they saw that trailer.
It's the same thing that they did with Jungle Book. It's an inventive new way to tell the story using a different medium and different technology. So it's like, they're not just repackaging where this feels like what they did with Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Note for note.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Nothing new.
Almost shot for shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the next movie is Booksmart. I actually don't know a lot about this movie, but it looks interesting. I think it's like a coming of age.
It's Olivia Wilde's directorial debut.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that. And I flew back from South by Southwest on a plane filled with the cast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Were they talking about it at all?
No, my wife saw it at South by Southwest, and she had a lot of fun. She said it was a really fun movie. Mm-hmm. So, but that's all I know about it either.
Okay. Yeah.
All right,
so check it out with that.
Jason Sudeikis is in it.
Oh, okay.
And then, a bunch of young kids.
Youngies. Right. Bunch of youngies.
And, of course, the really creepy anti-superhero movie Brightburn also comes out this weekend.
I keep seeing trailers for that. Yeah. They're basically the same one, but I'm always like, after we watched it last week, I really want to see this.
Now,
what if Superman went bad? That's all they did, and it was the pitch that was it, and they made it.
Now, James Gunn is producing. I'm sure that's how it got made. Aaron, why don't you read me the names of the writers on this movie?
Oh, wow. That's a...
Yeah.
So this Irredeemable, the comic series where that's not Superman going bad, but it's a Superman-like character.
It is, honestly, this is even closer to Superman where it's like alien baby raised in the heartland, has the same powers apparently as Superman, but just it goes bad.
Yeah.
So
that's
Brian Mark Gunn. Yeah. No relation to James Gunn, I'm sure. So I think the Gunn family got together and cooked up this movie.
What's that?
Any
brother and a cousin.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So all the Gunns that weren't in John Wick.
Yeah, exactly. So now the thing that intrigues me about this is it's really not even going anti superhero. It's going one step further into horror movie territory for sure. But what I also like is kind of the mystery about it. Like, what's that symbol that he keeps scribbling in the trailers? Like, what does that mean? And what's his origin?
I think it's like you say, it's not anti-superhero, but it is a good answer to cape fatigue.
Right.
To anyone's like, oh, we've had enough superhero. Well, we haven't had this superhero story. It's not even, it's about, like, what would you do if they went
bad? And how would you stop it?
We've had those characters in superhero movies, like the X-Men and stuff like that. The people with the superpowers that went wrong.
Right. Dark Phoenix is going to be that, I guess. Right.
But it kind of goes back to what made the
first...
You have
to find a rock of Burnanite.
Yes. But you remember the first season of Heroes.
Right.
What made that so cool and inventive? I mean, this is 10 years ago or whatever. Because it was like, oh, they're all kind of like what made The Watchmen interesting was like, if people actually had powers, they all wouldn't be waving the flag and helping everybody and getting cats out of trees. Some of them would be like, fuck this. Yeah. I'm going to do some evil shit.
What would they do with it? And, you know, that's interesting. That show was ahead of its time. And then couldn't have gone more far off the rails after a couple of seasons.
I've never seen a TV show.
Yeah, took such a dive, such a plummet.
Yeah.
It was a writer's strike that kind of just derailed it, wasn't it? I think that second season came right in the middle of
that. There was a writer's strike, and then I also remember hearing that they tied up all, because the first season went so bananas, it was a blockbuster, you know, ratings-wise. They tied up all these actors in these huge, heavy contracts.
Right.
And so they couldn't kill anybody off or do anything interesting with the characters, which what made season one so interesting is you thought, oh, this character's awesome. Oh, God, they're gone. And they were like, so then we had to kind of, combined with the writer's strike, kind of had to rehash all these. It was just like nothing became interesting anymore.
Yep. Then everything just, oh, this is a random event every week that's going to happen that makes no sense or doesn't follow the story or the past two or three seasons. So, and then there was all this publicity and press like, oh, no, new writing staff, we're turning the ship and like, you know, keep watching, it's going to get better. And then it never did.
Never did.
So then they did a revival, like Heroes Reborn. They tried to bring out the season series.
That.
But by then everyone was like, look, you already screwed us over once. We're not, your chances are over. You're done. We're not watching this dumb
The thing. Lightning in the bottle's out.
Yeah.
It's over. You got an empty bottle.
Yeah. Remember, your first show came out before the Marvel movies were hitting.
Yeah.
So, we're done now.
You missed it.
Yeah,
it's over.
Yeah. So, all right. So, and coming out this week, that is it. Ladies and gentlemen, that is our show.
At 468, guys.
Yeah. Tom Merritt, where can people find you on the internet? And the. Isn't there a network name? Frog Pants, is that
right?
Yeah,
the Frog Pants Network is what I'm a part of. That's Scott Johnson's network. I feel like I have to admit that I wrote a time travel book. It's a novel about...
You should be admitting that,
A time traveler named Pilot X.
But when? When did you write it?
It was over so many decades.
Yeah,
it's about a time traveler who realizes that to stop this devastating time war, he has to destroy all of his people and two other races. And he doesn't really want to do that because that sounds awful. And how he comes to his decision about that is what that novel is about. It's called Pilot X. And you can find it at tommerrittbooks.com.
Oh, great. Is it also, can I get it on Kindle and Amazon too?
Yeah, it's Kindle, audiobook, print, all of that.
Oh, great.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Wherever fine books are sold. And anything else, all the other podcasts I do and everything, if you want to keep track of that, I have a newsletter at freetomnewsletter.com.
All right. Because
there's no charge.
Oh, I was going to say, because you're in prison? Is that...
also...
It really sounds like you are...
Yeah. 2,000 subscribers, I will go free.
Can we let's start a protest at Free Tom Merritt?
Yes. Keep subscribing until I'm...
Yeah, Free Tom Merritt newsletter. It's like, all right, let's keep going until he's free.
We got to get Tom Merritt off from behind bars, everybody. Yeah. We're doing this via Skype. He's in a federal correctional institution.
Oh, no, it's different bars. It's, you know, pubs and...
Oh, Tom has a drinking problem. So that's what we're trying to get...
Free me from it.
Free him from his never-ending pub crawl. He thinks he's 19, and it's just causing a lot of problems.
Thanks, you guys, for having me again.
Dude,
really
thanks.
Fun.
Always great having you on the show. Always great having you on the show.
Everything's on iTunes, all those shows, and we can
iTunes, Spotify, all the places podcasts are. You can look for Daily Tech News Show, Cord Killers, Sword and Laser, etc.
Awesome.
Check out Tom, all that business he's got. Go to tomsallthatbusiness.gov or whatever the hell his website is. And free Tom Merritt.
That, whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah, whatever that shit he's got cooking up over there.
He's a podcast spook. Is that what you're saying?
He's podcast deep state.
Yeah.
Tom Merritt jailing himself intentionally.
Yes,
I don't trust it. I don't trust it
false
at all.
False flags everywhere.
Oh, that's all he is. That's one of his podcasts should be false flags.
Yeah.
Free Tom Merritt from the grips of the NSA, everybody. Yes. Get him out from underneath. Make him turn him into a Snowden.
Yep, they're making him do all that stuff over and over again.
Oh God, it's horrifying. It's just free.
You'd think a time machine would be fun.
I know it's not. It's not as fun as you'd think. It's a big headache. Folks, that is it. Episode 468, halfway to 936. You thought I forgot. You're wrong.
Oh, I didn't. I knew it was coming.
Goddamn, buckle up. It's coming. So, quarter of the way to 1862. 1872. Shit.
Well, no one corrected you.
What are they going to do? Someone will be on Twitter. Took too long to set up the things and his math was wrong. On a free podcast, it's just a joke about how many podcasts they've done.
The worst part is he was reading that.
I know. And I don't know why they would make a tweet in that voice. I don't know why.
All Twitter sounds like that.
It does. It really does. Mm-hmm. It's either some version of that.
Yeah. I didn't like the ending to Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Well, then shut up. Yeah. You shouldn't have been spending money on HBO. I never watched one episode. I didn't care what. The ending didn't bother me at all.
Mm.
How's that sound?
Yeah.
Assholes.
By the way, the last season was a little rushed, but go ahead. Yeah.
I did see somebody they did a close up on like a scene of a bunch of guys sitting at a table in whatever Mulderdorf or wherever they live.
Mulderdorf.
And they go $15 million an episode and someone couldn't catch this and you see a water bottle behind one of the guy's feet.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Pay attention, folks. That's why I didn't watch.
Yeah.
That's
because of the continuity errors.
Too many continuity errors.
Coffee cup, water bottle, forget it.
It's like,
dragons?
Yes,
fuck you.
I'm out. This is ridiculous.
Come on. There's not dragons in this fake world or wherever you're living and whatever. Mulderdash. Anyway, Progressive Comedy Tour, folks. Next month, Rob Lacone and I, June 12th through the 19th, we're going to D.C., Baltimore, two nights in Philly, New Haven, Connecticut, New York City, and Boston. June 12th through the 19th. Go to grahamatwood.com for all of my tour dates.
All right, check that out. And also, Long Ago and Far Away, up on Comixology, issue 4 dropping this week. Check it out. Only $1.99 per issue. So you could check it out. A lot of CFN Easter eggs that fans are finding in them, for sure. And the last episode, the last issue had one Game of Thrones Easter egg in it.
Oh,
so you can find it.
Well, I
so,
water bottle.
So check it out.
It's a water bottle.
It's a water bottle, yeah. So check it out. That is our show, Graham.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you, Aaron Brungart, and everyone here at the All Things Comedy World headquarters. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first. Free Tom Merritt.